Welcome to the Dialogue Studio. This podcast series is hosted by the Ikeda Center for Peace, Learning, and Dialogue. In it, we explore the transformational practice of dialogue and why it is important, especially in this current moment. I'm your host, Lillian Koizumi. In these episodes, you will hear from individuals from all walks of life sharing what dialogue means to them and how they are practicing it in their daily lives. We will also introduce our founder Daisaku Ikeda's philosophy of dialogue and the various approaches and strategies we practice here at the center. For Ikeda, the more severe the challenges we face, the more crucial it is that we persist in dialogue, because dialogue has the power to break down the walls of mistrust, hatred, and division in the hearts of people everywhere. We hope you will join us in this endeavor to transform our world one dialogue at a time. Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Dialogue Studio today. It's been a busy fall at the Ikeda Center. We just had our 2025 annual Ikeda Forum on the theme of engaging difference in an age of division. It was a deeply meaningful gathering with our scholar friends, youth, and Ikeda Center community. Thank you to all those who joined us. I was so encouraged to see a packed house of folks from all walks of life wanting to learn more about how we can heal in community, how we can lean into dialogue, and how we can embrace our differences and still be able to see each other's humanity. In seemingly hopeless times, it gave me a lot of hope. Yet, as we enter the last few months of 2025, it can feel like there's still so many reasons to feel hopeless when we think about what's happening in our country and the world at large. So I thought it might be a good time to do another What Do We Mean By episode and explore what do we mean by hope. Hope is among the most foundational principles in our founder Daisaku Ikeda's worldview. This is because it represents a fundamental orientation toward life, as opposed to something that is to be deployed on a situational basis. And for Mr. Ikeda, it is an orientation that we choose. To further explain what he means by that, I'd like to read a few excerpts from his essay, The Most Important Decision. Looking at the world today, it is easy to feel despair. A kind of powerlessness seems to be the prevailing mood in the world today. Decisions about important issues all seem to be made somewhere beyond our reach. What can one person accomplish in the face of the vast forces that run our world? The current of the times can seem so fast-flowing and complex as to be overwhelming. I do not believe that people are powerless. The philosophical tradition that I embrace teaches on the most fundamental dimension, that of life itself, that each human life partakes of the limitless life force of the cosmos. The same power that moves the universe exists within our lives. Each individual has immense potential, and a great change in the inner dimension of one individual's life has the power to touch others' lives and transform society. Everything begins with us. Hope, in this sense, is a decision. It is the most important decision we can make. Hope changes everything, starting with our lives. Hope is the force that enables us to take action to make our dreams come true. As long as we have hope, there is nothing we cannot achieve. When we possess the treasure of hope, we can draw forth our inner potential and strength. A person of hope can always advance. We learn here that hope is not something that we feel because things are going well, and it's not something that happens to us. It is something that we have to bring forth from within. As Jason Gula, director of the Institute for Daisaku Ikeda Studies and Education at DePaul University, wrote in the book Hope and Joy in Education, quote, "For Ikeda, hope is not passive or wishful thinking. It is engaged and determined," end quote. I think it's important to note that this ethos or orientation of hope stems from Ikeda's own lived experiences. Growing up in militaristic Japan during World War II, Ikeda's home was destroyed and his older brother was killed in the war. As a teenager, he witnessed the immense unjust suffering of ordinary people. However, through encountering the philosophy of Nichiren Buddhism and his mentor Jose Toda, he was able to transform his struggles in life into fuel and determination to contribute to a peaceful world. I think when he says hope is a decision, he is speaking from his own experience of having to choose hope over and over again. As Gula commented in a podcast interview, for Ikeda, hope and joy are serious. In other words, hope is nurtured when we face life and its challenges head on. I will conclude this portion with another passage from the same essay, The Most Important Decision. There may be times when confronted by cruel reality, we verge on losing all hope. If we cannot feel hope, it is time to create some. We can do this by digging deeper within, searching for even a small glimmer of light, for the possibility of a way to begin to break through the impasse before us. And our capacity for hope can actually be expanded and strengthened by difficult circumstances. Hope that has not been tested is nothing more than a fragile dream. Hope begins from this challenge, this effort to strive toward an ideal, however distant it may seem. Now, as we've done in previous What Do We Mean By episodes, I'd like to invite one of my colleagues at the Ikeda Center to join me to further unpack this concept and talk a little bit about what it looks like in our daily life. Today, let's welcome our program and office assistant, Priyandra Noel, to the studio. Hello, Pri. Thank you for joining us in the Dialogue Studio today to talk about the concept of hope. I sent you a few questions in advance. And the first one, maybe we can dive right in, is based on Mr. Ikeda's philosophy and our work at the center, what does hope mean to you and how do you cultivate and sustain it in your own life?
Yes, thank you so much, Lillian, for having me and especially for allowing me to dive into this topic, because I love Mr. Ikeda's perspective around hope, and I think it's never not the right time to revisit his perspective on it. Mm. And so as I was grappling with, like, what does hope mean to me? A lot of it is informed by his approach to what hope is, mainly because I practice the form of Buddhism that he was known for practicing. But beyond that, because that was in the background of my life and because it continued to resonate with me, his perspective of it very much is like my own, is what I feel like. Mm. But to try to describe it from a way that's not linked to him first is that, to me, hope is basically never giving up. And to elaborate that on that a little more, it's never giving up on becoming absolutely happy in a life that's filled with inevitable sufferings. Mm. And so what does that look like? Like, what do you mean, you know, not giving up with all this stuff happening? And that's where then I'd like to bring in Mr. Ikeda's quote on it, because it'll further clarify what I mean. He says, this is from an essay collection titled Hope is a Decision, where Mr. Ikeda says, the moment we make a powerful resolve, every nerve and fiber in our being will immediately orient itself toward our success. On the other hand, if we think this is never going to work out, then at that instant, every cell in our being will be deflated and give up the fight. Hope in this sense is a decision. And I love that. Like, my life motto is precisely hope is a decision. Again, because Mr. Ikeda was fortunately always in the backdrop of my life, but really because as I grow wiser in age and have various life experiences, it's almost surprising how it is so easy to lose sight of this truth, in that, like, even when the world seems to be crumbling, or let's say I have personal obstacles that feel like I can't overcome them, this reminder that, oh, but I can still decide to have hope, and therefore through that bring about some kind of positive alternate reality that isn't present now, is such a lifeline for me. Because I think even with having hope as a decision in my mind basically all my life, it's so difficult to practice when you forget that simple truth and that we have to keep deciding to have it. So that's what it does mean to me too. But in terms of how I cultivate and sustain it in my own life, this looks different every day. There are two primary things that come to mind. One is keeping gratitude at the center, but then also having the spirit of awe and wonder. And so let's say I wake up grumpy or irritable because I didn't sleep good. And, you know, I have a 30-minute lovely walk to work. And like, as I walk, I, you know, appreciate kind of the fact that I have, you know, legs that are allow me to get to work, or, you know, appreciating the foliage and how like the trees are changing color and how like these are the trees that give me the oxygen that allows me to breathe and like enjoy the days. And, you know, having that ability to appreciate every little thing, like to not take everything for granted, helps me also keep the hope flame alive. But then the wonder piece is also, I think it's easy to kind of become automated in the way that you live, but to still have this childlike spirit of like, you know, how can I imagine something that's not here in a way that keeps me grateful too? So like, I might be so preoccupied or frustrated with something, but then I hear a child laughing and I'm reminded like, wow, you know, there was a time when we were so innocent to just the realities of the heaviness of the world. And how do I keep having the awe and wonder that allows me to tap into that also informs how I keep cultivating hope. And maybe to kind of close this thought, because I've already said a lot so far, but I really like how when I think of hope as a decision, I also think of hope being like a seed. And if you think about how the trees are growing and everything, like somehow, even in a desert, a seed manifested a cactus. Or in New England, we have many seeds that manifest many different things. And so it's like what cultivating hope, cultivating the seed looks like is how do we become people who like water that seed, who make sure when the soil is not fertile, we do what we can to freshen it up. Or it's really like the seed is always there. And if that's the truth, that's the reality, what am I doing to make sure I'm contributing to the flow of helping that seed thrive? And Mr. Ikeda talks about that hope seed. It's there in our life. Like that's where it begins. It's I have a seed in my life. I have a seed in your life. That stranger's life, that friend's life, that dog, that bird, that tree, like everything has it. So this decision of cultivating it is more tapping into that power that's there that is waiting for us to like call it forth.
Wow. That was really encouraging, Pri. And I love the visual of the seed, though I was like, oh, I wonder what a cactus seed looks like. I would be so curious now to look that up. But I think, especially thinking about a seed in the desert, like, I think is a very powerful imagery because I love, kind of connects to what I also appreciated in earlier points you made. I love that you situated hope within the context of a life that is filled with struggles, because I think that's very much, as you shared, Mr. Ikeda's way of thinking about hope is not just being hopeful when things are going well. So thinking about the plant, you know, blooming in the desert is very much, I think, aligned with that. And I also appreciated the way that you brought in concrete examples of appreciation, like ways that you really nurture that seed in your own life. And that visual of you like walking in the morning was like really beautiful too. And we're in rhythm because I referenced the same essay earlier in this episode. I really love that idea of like, hope being something that we that takes effort, and it's like an intention and a determination almost, right? That we put forth with like almost like when you were reading it, like with our whole life, like it's not easy. And so I really appreciated you bringing in that quote. And I just had one follow up to your response. You know, said this phrase a few times that Mr. Ikeda says, which is hope is a decision. And I spoke a little bit about this earlier too. And I was wondering if you can think of, it doesn't have to be recent, but an example in your own life when you had to really decide to have hope versus just like having hope. And maybe it was difficult, but just like that to illustrate or to give an example of what does it really look like to make that decision, I thought might be helpful for our listeners. So if anything comes to mind, if you don't mind sharing.
Wow, we're so in rhythm because I had a feeling you were going to ask this question. And I think it's such an important one because part of my exploration or re-exploration of what hope means to me required that I think of scenarios where I actively decided to have hope. Mm. And one that comes to mind for me, which is just always, I'd say, a turning point in my practice of deciding to have hope. And it's actually not a turning point only. It's also a prime point, one may say. Like, it's what I go back to remember, look how you had hope and how your life has drastically changed. Mm. And so this example is something I think I can confidently say all people experience this in some capacity. Mm. And more specifically, so I had a very, very beloved person of mine pass away a few years ago. That beloved person is my mother. But before I get into that, I think death is something we all experience in different ways. And I just wanted to hold space for the fact that, like, how I'm about to describe how hope helped me, I think is applicable in both death and non-death losses. Mm. And more specifically, you know, we grieve losses when, you know, our loved ones die, our beloved dog or cat dies. But there are also the kinds of grief that we experience when we lose a job, mm. or when we go through a heartbreak, mm. or when we lose our home in an unexpected fire. And so when I use an absolute that this is something everyone may be able to relate to, that's what's in the back of my mind, mm. how we all have experiences of some kind of death or non-death loss. But that being said, my mom was like a huge anchor or like this rock in my life. And she passed when I was 21. And so I was still figuring myself out, not just as a young adult, but as just an individual in my undergraduate career. And so part of my grief journey, part of the hindsight has been realizing that we were very dependent on each other. So there was a lot of shared joy that fueled how I lived my day to day. So it's like, if I get this good grade, I know my mom will be happy. Or if I have a lot of great friends, I know she'll be happy because she won't have to worry about me. And so without realizing it, the younger me was subtly associating like happinesses that are my own, but that were shared with her. Mm. And so when she passed, quite naturally, like my life turned upside down, as happens with many people when they lose someone they love. And so I was really at like rock bottom, pit of despair, wondering like, you know, if I can't share that joy with her, how do I move on? Mm. What does life without her look like? I'm only 21. We had talked about living together until she was like 100 and, you know, so all these things. But the reality I was presented with was, she's not here. What are you going to do? Are you just going to sulk in this despair and misery and kind of allow yourself to experience a life that is just dark and attached to the lonely experiences, or just like feeling miserable she's gone? Or are you going to do what she would have loved for you to do, which is to continue to become happy while like living on her behalf, but also remembering her? So the decision I had to make was to have hope. Mm-hmm. And what that looked like for me was, unexpectedly, you know, she had passed when I was a third year in college. I think I calculated that right. And so, you know, I was preparing to write a capstone, and there was a lot of new chapter things that were unfolding. Mm. And because she had passed, I had this unique opportunity to, part of it was desperation, but part of it was recognizing I had to graduate. I decided I'm going to like study death and lean into my grief by writing about it in the form of my capstone thesis, which fortunately, my advisor and the whole university allowed me to do. But because that was there as well, you know, the way I decided to have hope was to not forget, or going back to what I said earlier, to not forget to like not give up. Mm. Like in this moment precisely, I cannot give up. Mm. And if part of our shared dream was for me to graduate, or part of our shared dream was for me to really build a foundation of happiness, the first thing I need to do to overcome this suffering of mine was like, I need to understand why this happened so that if it happens again, which quite naturally it will and it has, that I won't react the same way that I did to her loss, which fortunately, it was fine in that I had a great support system. And because I had this orientation of like, I'm not going to let this bring me back, you know, I moved forward. I know there are many other scenarios that could have befell me that would have been more challenging. But because I had those things, I was really able to really recognize that this is now my challenge. Like, if I can break through here, the ways in which I can relate to other people, the ways in which I could genuinely become absolutely happy, not just for myself, but like myself and others, like that's what I had to do. And so it wasn't just this wishful thinking of, I hope this painful, like tight feeling in my chest will disappear, but it's like, I'm going to do something with this grief to transform this pain into, again, appreciation, wonder, and awe of like the fact that I'm here and that she and my dad helped bring me into this world to experience this very precious life. So yeah, I kind of went all around, but in a nutshell, I'm here 7 years later because I realized like you can't let that stop you. You know, you have to, in face of it, become happy. And yeah, I think through that, it was also so mystic how, you know, when the pandemic hit and other losses were happening, that I never would have anticipated that loss way before the pandemic in the form of my mom would be the thing that helped me really like understand deeply other people's sufferings, which then also helped me cultivate and grow my sense of why cultivating hope is important, which Mr. Ikeda talks about a lot. You know, thematically, hope is within, but it also grows when you share it. It also grows when it's tested, you know, all these things. And yeah, that experience for me was definitely one of that.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Pri, for sharing that experience with all of our listeners. I, of course, have heard you share in different ways and in different spaces. And I was like, really, I was so happy when somehow you got assigned to what do we mean by hope? Because in so many ways, and I think I've shared this with you and others as well, like you really embody someone of hope, of like tremendous, unwavering hope. And I feel like the hope that I feel from you has always been like very powerful and healing. And I think hearing you share your story in the context of this podcast episode just really, I think, drove home for me why the hope that I feel from you is so strong, because it was not easy. And for me, the way that you are determined to have hope and give hope to others, like really makes me feel your determination to keep the hope that your mom gave to you and nurtured in you alive. And that it must have been so strong, the hope that you felt and nurtured together with your mom, that it's like the kind of hope that I can feel you want to just share with as many people as possible. And so you're never like hesitant to share that hope with others. Even when I've seen you interact with people that are either very hopeless or negative, like you just don't hesitate to be like, no, this is what hope means. And I have seen you really impact people just through your life. And so it was like powerful to think about that and what I've seen over the years since you moved here, you know, years after your mom passed, and then to see that hope grow in so many ways, you know, through our work together here and of course through our friendship. And I had read earlier in the episode another part of that same essay from Mr. Ikeda, where he says, if we cannot feel hope, it's time to create some. And I wrote that down again when I was listening to your story and experience, because I think that's like exactly what you did. You know, you created hope in that moment, and you continue to do that. And, you know, I can see how, wow, like when we decide to have hope when there's no reason to have hope, like how much that further expands our lives in ways that maybe you never could have imagined. And if it's okay for me to share with the listeners, but Pri just also completed her master's, right? And do you want to share, Pri, what your master's was in?
Yeah, no, thank you for the opportunity to share it because it's all really related. As I mentioned earlier, I did my capstone in my undergrad on death. And then because of my mom's passing, even more, I just grew this fascination of like, how else can I deepen my understanding of death? And so I ended up finding a degree in something called thanatology, which is the study of death, dying, and bereavement, to put it in a nutshell. And so I'm not an expert in death per se, but I definitely have had this opportunity to really deepen my understanding of like what happened, you know, what was coming up for me. What does the actual process of death bring about in people? How do we prepare for a better death? What is, you know, what is required of us in terms of breaking the taboo around our understanding of it that can inform a more fulfilling life is at least what I took away from the degree. So, yeah, that, again, was something I would have never thought of pursuing a graduate degree in had my mom's passing not impacted my life the way that it did. And so, yeah.
Yeah, it's so amazing because you, through hope and choosing hope, you turn what could have just been like this really deep, painful suffering, which I'm sure you still experience, but then into this like amazing mission that I feel like you're continuing to explore and fulfill as you continue to, I'm sure, choose hope again and again. You know, as you continue to experience grief, I'm sure to this day, right? But continuing to go through that process of, you know, choosing hope and creating meaning and value from that grief. And yeah, Mr. Ikeda said in another part of the essay, which I also read earlier, which is he said that a person of hope can always advance. And so I feel like, yeah, you've advanced so much, you know, through that experience. So yeah, thank you so much, Pri, for sharing all of that. So yeah, we have just one more question for today. And I feel like you kind of touched on this when you were answering the first question. But I think we're not trying to say here at the center that, you know, we don't recognize the reality of this moment and that there are, in fact, like many reasons to be hopeless. And so, you know, recognizing that it is really challenging and it's not easy to continue to have hope, yet there's like value in really like trying to bring forth the kind of hope that Mr. Ikeda is talking about in these times. And so I think as we continue to grapple and explore this notion of hope from our founder, it is like, you know, a reality that a lot of people feel like it's not a priority or realistic to have hope. Like there's so many other things, right, that we need to do. And so maybe like having hope is too idealistic or, yeah, again, it's not rooted in reality. And so I know we've been having a lot of conversations about that. So I was wondering, like, what do you feel about that? And has your ability to have hope been impacted in the recent years? And if so, like, how have you navigated that change?
Wow. Yes. Well, just echoing what you said, definitely there's a lot of suffering in the world that is emerging in ways that, yeah, I hope what I say now, my decision or my determination is that how I say what I'm about to say is conveyed at its essence based off of its intention. But I think it's totally realistic to have hope now more than ever, actually. And having said that, my ability to decide to have hope has been impacted in that, you know, especially when you open Instagram or TikTok or the news, if I just tune into that, it's easier for me to forget this basic decision that, you know, I want to keep practicing living, which is to have hope. You know, I'm human. I get angry. I get sad. I feel despair. But I decided that I would keep, now more than ever, leaning into the fact that that's precisely why I have to still decide to have hope. And so the reason why in me actively practicing continuing to decide to have hope, the reason like, or hold on, let me say that again. The reason why I believe it's so realistic now more than ever to have hope is because without it, I don't think we would be here. And by that, I mean, yes, we're seeing so much more suffering in a different kind of way than maybe other times. You know, each time has its own issues. But again, emphasizing like this active choice and not succumbing to this passive feeling, I think in this climate, what that means is having faith in people's goodness, especially when division's prevalent, especially when there are many people with whom you disagree with, who also may not see the dignity of your life in the way that you're deciding to see in their life. And, you know, there's definitely, for lack of words, a way in which evil is getting stronger, one might say. But I feel like each time the individual decides to see the witnessing of that evil, whatever that may be for you, personal, social, whatever, if it becomes the impetus for you to further determine like, oh, this is why I have to lay the foundation to be absolutely happy myself so that I don't contribute and add on to that negative energy or that evil energy, like that's the work that deciding to have hope allows you to do. And so when I believe that, even when I feel like people might be disrespectful of me or towards me or evil, one might say, like I have to still decide that there's, in Buddhist terminology, a Buddhahood in their life. Like there's still someone who was once a child. There's still someone who has the capacity to change. Do I believe that? Can I continue to believe that even if they're yelling at my face or calling me whatever word that degrades my life? But the second more important piece to this is I also have to be consistent in my effort to cultivate that hope within myself. So if I'm being swayed by what I see on the news, what I see on Instagram, you know, what am I doing to change how I react or respond to that? And something I've been doing tangibly is, you know, if there's something I don't disagree with or don't understand, am I taking the time out to research and understand why these things are coming up, why there's a prevalence of these views that rub up against my own? And so, you know, that practice is something, because I decide to have hope, has actually helped me open my mind. So now, instead of getting angry when someone's like, I don't agree with you, or, you know, I mean, I still get angry, but there's value in my anger, because instead of just leaving it at that, I become curious. Like, why does someone think this way? Why am I struggling to believe that they can be good? Why do I feel like they don't think I'm good? You know, all these questions, there's still room for me to unpack the answer to that on my own as well, alongside doing that with others. So, I think Mr. Ikeda at some point also emphasized that having hope is both idealistic and pragmatic. It's idealistic in that you have to, as you highlighted earlier, believe or create something that might not necessarily be there, but it's pragmatic. It's something that can be made real because you're not going to just wishfully think about it, but you're, again, actively choosing to do the things to bring about that reality. So, yeah, it's all me. The state of the world is somehow, somehow still a reflection of what I can do to change me.
I feel like everything you shared really captures, you know, when Mr. Ikeda says that hope that has not been tested is nothing more than a fragile dream. And I feel like we're all trying to create this dream of what like a peaceful future could look like. And so if this dream is to be solid and robust, then like our hope, this moment when our hope is tested, almost it's like this is necessary for us to realize that kind of dream. And all of us like challenging ourselves in the way that you just described is the process of making this dream a reality. So I think when you said that, it was like really powerful. And I also really appreciated you continuing to speak to the power of one person. And I don't know why it made me think of, there's this, I think it's a Buddhist parable, but it might just be a story. Maybe it's not necessarily a Buddhist one, but Mr. Ikeda shares it. There's this story of this man who's on the beach and there's all these starfish that have been washed up to the surface, and he's like throwing them one by one into the ocean. And this other person walks by and is like, why are you doing that? There's no way you're going to be able to save all these starfish. And then the man essentially says, but this one starfish that he's holding, like, it's going to make a difference for this one starfish. Mm-hmm. And therefore, he's going to continue to do that. Mm-hmm. And so when you were describing your thinking around this question, it made me think of that as well.
May I add one more
thing? Of course.
It just made me excited because, so as everyone who's listening knows or will come to know, we work at a Peace Learning and Dialogue Center, dialogue being a big part of what we do. And in relation to hope, I was just thinking, like, examples of individuals showing me what hope in dire circumstances look like are, for example, hearing that a Black man and a KKK leader were able to have a dialogue to the extent that the KKK leader changed his perspective, not because the Black man forced him to believe one way or the other, but because he gave that person the space to get to know him in the way that the other person somehow allowed to happen as well. That gives me hope. But then, you know, there's even the hope that looks like and I always think, I talk about my dad a lot because we have this kind of relationship that there was always love from the beginning. Mm. You know, we were all navigating different things. So, you know, there was a period in my life where I didn't realize there was a little bit of resentment I had towards him for how he was as a dad. But it doesn't end there because, you know, what gives me hope is, even though, without going into detail, that resentment was there, through dialogue, through love, like, he's my best friend. Mm. Like, if anything, he was very integral, like, number one in making sure that I was okay after my mom passed. Mm. And so that gives me hope. And to close the loop, it comes back to dialogue, because I was really thinking, like, why did Mr. Ikeda say dialogue is the surest path to peace? Mm. Like, he was absolute that this is the only way. And everyone will have their own interpretations or understanding of why he said that. That's something we hope people who visit our center could discover for themselves. But for me, yesterday, it occurred to me that maybe it's because dialogue allows us to co-create peace. Mm. Like, I can become happy on my own in a mountain far, far away. But we're social beings. Mm. There's no beauty in just me becoming happy if there's still people around me who are suffering, just like right down the street to like another country. Like, there's always going to be someone who's suffering, not comparatively, but also somewhat comparatively a little bit more than you. So, you know, dialogue is what allows us to stay humble. I have my moments. Other people have our moments. How do we keep moving and growing in a way where we all feel like, oh, I am becoming happier. Mm. I think that's the kind of world we're trying to create with the work we do here. So
yes,
that gives me hope.
Wow. Wow. Thank you, Pri.
Thanks for listening. People will know that I've said this many times. I love to talk, and Lillian does such a beautiful job like giving me that space. So we'll see how much of what I said makes it into the podcast.
All of it is making it in. Well, you do work at a dialogue center. So but since you love talking, I have one short question to close out our time together. So I don't know, when you were sharing earlier throughout this, you know, 20, 30 minutes we've had together, I kept thinking about a friend of mine that is like you. She is just inherently such a hopeful person. And she also grew up under like very difficult circumstances. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about this recently where she said that often she just feels like the odd one, you know, mm-hmm. or sometimes people would just feel like she's crazy or like not take her seriously. And so she just talked about how it's this constant battle to continue to be her true hopeful self in society and in spaces that she enters. And I just was wondering, like, what would you say to people who are trying to be that sunshine of hope in like a real sense, you know, with the rain, with the storm, but still they're shining kind of sunshine when, like, I don't know, people have become so skeptical of things like hope and peace in our society. And so it's so easy to be like, oh, maybe I shouldn't shine, or maybe I shouldn't, you know, share my like power of hope with others. So I was just wondering what you would say, what would you say to people who are trying to do that in our world?
Wow. Thank you for that question. It's so in rhythm with something I was reading during my lunch break, but for some reason, this phrase comes out to me, this ethical duty to enjoy yourself. Mm-hmm. And I totally resonate with how, yeah, sometimes it's like, ooh, am I like too happy? Like, I hope they know that it's not that I don't understand their suffering, but that like, I'm not trying to let go of the happiness I'm building, right?
Yeah,
so I've definitely had those moments. But when I think about like, why we still have to embrace, no, not still have to, why we have the opportunity, like we get to embrace this opportunity to like come into who we are becoming, right? Mm-hmm. And so I guess as someone who's also challenging myself in the same way that your friend is, I think I say this to myself as well, but to like shine anyways. Mm-hmm. Like I can be making the people around me happy in a superficial way where it's like, I'll keep the peace just because I don't want to get you angry. Mm-hmm. But maybe sometimes happiness and joy or the creation of that looks like building the kind of trust with yourself and the world around you to where if you have to yell at me for me to like have some kind of awakening, like that's what we're trying to create. Mm. Like it doesn't mean, you know, no conflict or no difference. Mm. It just means we become people who can embrace that difference more. Mm. And if you being different looks like you being the happy odd one out, I think that's our superpower. Mm. And the moment we let that dull, then we're in trouble. So like, let's just keep shining. Let's just keep experiencing the beauty of the discomfort and the uncertainty, because we don't know unless through dialogue, how your joy is genuinely helping someone, maybe even behind the scenes. Mm. Not everyone's going to tell you your smile made my day, but there's so many moments I'm walking down the street and someone gives me a smile that I wasn't expecting. And it's like, that's right. Like, why am I so grumpy right now? You know, like there's just, you just never know. So let's keep shining.
Let's keep shining.
With determined hope.
Hope. Yes. Yes. Okay. So if there's anything that you need to take away from today's conversation, it's that. Keep shining with determined hope.
Mm.
Yeah. I love that.
Let's do it.
Well, thank you, Pri. I'm sure we'll have you back again soon. And yeah, I thank you to our listeners for tuning in. And we'll see you next time.
See you. Peace out.
Bye. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today for another What Do We Mean By episode. I will include some resources on hope in the episode description. Stay tuned for our next concept. If you have any questions or concepts that you'd like to learn about, please email us at podcasts@ikedacenter.org. To learn more about the Ikeda Center, you can also visit our website at ikedacenter.org or follow us on social media at Ikeda Center. Until then, happy dialoguing.